The king had a new chief adviser. Thomas Cromwell, in turn mercenary soldier in Italy, cloth agent and moneylender, had served his apprenticeship in statecraft under Wolsey, but he had also learned the lessons of his master's downfall. Ruthless, cynical, Machiavellian, Cromwell was a man of the new age. His ambition was matched by his energy and served by a penetrating intelligence. When he succeeded Wolsey as the king's principal minister, he made no effort to inherit the pomp and glory of the fallen cardinal. Nevertheless, his were more solid achievements in both state and church. Before his day, government policy had for centuries been both made and implemented in the royal household. Though Henry VII had improved the system, he had remained, in a sense, a medieval king. Thomas Cromwell thoroughly reformed it during the 10 years of his power. And when he fell in 1540, policy was already carried out by government departments operating outside the household. Perhaps his greatest accomplishment, though not so dramatic as his other work, was his inception of the government service of modern England. Cromwell is the uncommemorated architect of our great departments of state.
It was Cromwell's hand that had guided the final arrangements of the king's divorce from Catherine of Aragon. The Privy Council, in 1536, replaced the King's Council as a sort of executive board of advisers and governors. It enforced policy, made sure the law courts worked, or tried to, and managed the economy. Through this, Cromwell started financial reforms of England, which eventually would distance the financing of royalty, what we call the civil list, from that of government. But his main task was to oversee the breakup of the monasteries, the dissolution. Monasteries often owed their allegiance to institutions outside England. This was now a contravention of Henry's supreme power over the church. Finally, if Henry were to keep the nobility on his side, then he had to make sure they'd be looked after. The best way to do that was with patronage and money.
Cromwell handled the dissolution of the monasteries with conspicuous, cold-blooded efficiency. The high nobility and country gentry acquired all kinds of fine estates. The king was assured of the support of Parliament and the prosperous classes. Most of the displaced monks, nearly 10,000 in all, faced their lot with relief or fortitude, assisted by substantial pensions. Some even married nuns, and many became respectable parish clergy. The dissolution brought lands into the crown's possession worth at the time over £100,000 a year, and by the sale or lease of the rest of the former monastic properties, the crown gained £1.5 million, a huge sum in those days, though probably much less than the properties were worth. The main result of this transaction was, in effect, if not in intention, to commit the landed and mercantile classes to the Reformation settlement and the Tudor dynasty.